Blog Talk Radio.
We're on. And yet we're always a little bit off. All right, good evening. Welcome to Eerie House. What is it tonight? Is it oldie timey? No, it's just regular Eerie House Radio tonight. Issue number, I don't know, 679 or so. We've got, or 678. Overall, tonight we ring in the new year a little early. At least we celebrate the new year this weekend. We're going from 22 to 23. I'm Dale K from Spook Show here along with.
Get away from that microphone, go. Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here along with.
Never hang yourself with your favorite hang necktie. It is I, Gotta Go, Boy Blair. I don't know where that came from. But there. I said it.
Well, you wouldn't want to ruin your favorite necktie.
I know. Exactly. Exactly. That could be a bumper sticker.
Yeah. As the year draws to a close, are you fellas happy to say goodbye to 2022?
Yeah, but I'm not so sure I'm ready for 2023. How's that?
Well, it's coming. Like it or not, a couple more days left.
I don't remember that much of 2022, so you know, come what may.
It was a mixed bag for me. It was a mixed bag. There were some things that were disappointing, but some unexpected good moments. And then there's always every weekend doing Eerie House Radio. So that's a good
that's always a highlight.
Yes. Yeah. It is for me. We got two programs for you getting into the new year. And also joining us now in the studio is the lovely and delightful.
And a bit late, CW saying the clock is ticking away the final bits of 2022.
Yep. And many would say good riddance.
Well, I think we've had rougher years than this one, but
recently.
Did you hear that, CW? Well, I'll just say good riddance to you. What's that about?
Yes. I don't know.
Boy, that's right.
Yep.
I said it.
No, yes. I'm still of the opinion that 2020 will always be and forever known as the dumpster fire year.
Yeah.
2020?
Yeah. Yeah, that one pretty, nobody liked it. Nobody liked it.
It was the year of the plague mask. So there you go. Hey, we brought something back we needed.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it.
Yes, very chic. Yes, very fashionable.
Yeah, we are saying goodbye to 2022 and two tales tonight, The Whistler and Philippe Marlowe. Philip Marlowe.
Did he shop at J.C. Penney? Is that how that?
Yes, he did. As a matter of
fact. I bet he did.
Down the street from Le Woolworth. Uh-huh.
Le Woolworth.
What happened to Kresge?
I think they went to...
They don't know what happened to Kresge.
The Kresge.
You
shopping at Kresge?
Shea Gimli.
I know what the Kresge is, and I have shopped at Mart's Like and Do It.
I've been able to afford Le Club Mac.
Really? I've been able to afford a Big Mac, and that's about it.
You know they call it a Royale with cheese, don't you?
Cheese Royale.
Yeah.
Le Fromage Royale.
No, they call it a Royale with cheese in French. In France.
What?
What's that?
Oh,
what's that?
You guys got to watch Pulp Fiction more often. That's all I got to say. That was a conversation between John Travolta and
Samuel L. Jackson.
Thank you, Samuel L. Well, how did I forget his name? I like that guy. He's a good actor. They had this little conversation talking about what they, while they're on their way to kill somebody, having a pleasant conversation about what Big Macs are called in different parts of the world.
Yes, your everyday assassin conversations.
Yes.
Now, those two were together, but they were mercenary hitmen separate? I forget.
No. They worked together. They usually worked as a team. Mm-hmm. They got separated.
Oh, they worked together. And they just had the most bizarre conversations.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
And Samuel L. was always quoting from the one psalm from the Bible.
One tomb or another. Oh, okay.
And if you heard him saying it, you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. Weird. Tarantino.
That thing about, can't even think what it was. Something about helping your brother? Something?
What's that from?
I vaguely hear it. To uplift your brother, to help your brother or something. I forget what he said. I barely hear it in the back of my head, but it's weird.
From Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Maybe it's one of the, because they did play a lot of retro music in it. Maybe that's what you're thinking of, some of the older tunes that were in it. I don't know.
No, it was a quote about.
Yes.
It was.
Beware my brother's.
About your brother.
I don't know. I have the quote, but it's laden with obscenity, so I won't play it.
There it is. There it is. The word vengeance is in it.
Yes, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, and blah, blah, blah. He would go on this rant and just before
man.
He fried a guy or two. One of the guys from Mad TV was in it briefly. The guy who played the UBS guy. I love him. Anyway, enough.
Boy, I found it. For he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down with thee upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger. that's a great one.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the Guard the Ghoul Hour of Power. Here we go.
Hour of Power?
Reach behind your TV. Can you feel the power? That's what the...
Yeah. Well, you do have that come hither look. Anyway.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I'll send you a photograph of the image. It's kind of,
I would love
to. I didn't
to
see
that.
It until my producer said it, and then I was like, oh, okay, I see it. And he was like, yeah, maybe you don't want to. And I was like, okay, maybe I don't. I saw it, and I was like, it's a good photo, but yeah.
Oh, I've got something for you, by the way. I hope it's the right one. I was thinking about you.
Is it a statement of my back taxes? What are we talking about here?
Not exactly.
Newspaper.
So we're releasing your taxes.
Sure. Driving home at night, you can enjoy your newspaper as it lies there on the seat. And there's another good thing about newspapers. You can read them while you're rushing to get ready for work in the morning, right?
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight. And in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
That's Marmaladio, Gar. That's Marmaladio.
Yes, the Marmaladio song.
You posted something about marmalade. That's why I made the comment.
Yeah, marmalade.
Yes.
I saw that. Yes. I saw that ad, and I don't know what it was about that ad, but it triggered my cheeks, and I was salivating, going, "Oh my gosh, I'm tasting marmalade." Very odd.
Orange marmalade. I think I saw.
Yes.
Orange marmalade.
Marmaladio. Yeah.
And I was like, "Marmaladio." Oh, man, I could, and I have no marmalade in the house. Otherwise, I would have had some toast.
So you didn't run to the store for an impulse purchase?
Good
no,
heavens.
I, no,
I'm surprised.
I don't do it.
Everyone listening to this should have the strange impulse. Must have Marmaladio. Must have Marmaladio.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. They're probably also saying
I
must, have
a,
radio
a
programs. Must have radio programs.
Mm-hmm.
And where shall we start? How about, shall we go with Phil?
Marlo first.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Hard-boiled detective. Hard-boiled detective.
Yeah.
Is he?
Dave, any brief facts before we get started on this episode?
Sure.
Not really.
Okay, good. It's called The Old Acquaintance. And I'll bet any of us have got an original broadcast date for me. Please.
December 26, 1948.
Episode 14.
When it started, a girl's wedding and New Year's Eve were only 6 hours away, and I didn't think the bride-to-be would make either one of them. But that was before I ran up against the slot machine operator, the escaped convict, and above all, the old acquaintance.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. With Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Old Acquaintance.
At 6 o'clock in the last evening of the year, I was sitting with my feet up on my office desk thinking of impossible New Year's resolutions and what the girl on my butcher's 1949 calendar would or would not be wearing. But at that pleasant point, there was a soft, almost apologetic knock on my office door. I said, come in, and saw a quiet man in quiet clothes who extended a quiet hand. He introduced himself as Paul Riker, a Beverly Hills insurance broker. But the tremor in his voice said, very worried client, which on New Year's Eve was something I could do without.
Hey, Mr. Marlowe, you've got to find Nancy Marshall for me.
Just for a springboard, Mr. Riker, who is Nancy Marshall?
She's my fiancée. We were to be married at my place in Beverly Hills tonight.
On New Year's Eve?
Yes, you see, it was at a New Year's Eve party a year ago that we met for the first time.
Oh, when'd you last hear from her?
2 hours ago. She called and said that she was in terrible trouble, that nobody, especially the police, could help her, that the wedding was off.
I see. You're sure it's not just a matter of your being left at the altar, huh?
Another man. Oh, no, I'm certain that's not it. Now, please, Mr. Marlowe, will you help me?
Mr. Riker, to you, New Year's Eve means wedding bells, but to me, it's something else, specifically a cozy little apartment on Wilshire Boulevard where there's a very nice girl and a couple of chilled bottles of sham.
Oh, what is it, Mr. Marlowe?
Shh,
what's wrong?
There's somebody outside. Riker, get away from that door.
Oh, quick!
Whoever threw those shots through the frosted glass in my office door wasn't interested in checking up on his marksmanship. Because by the time I got to my feet, he was taking the stairs to the street. When I got outside, I was just in time to see him pile into a pickup truck and roar off. The best I could do was get a face full of exhaust fumes and the last three numbers on his license plate, which read 711. When I got back to Riker and the glass on my office floor, I found the potential groom whiter, shakier, and less quiet than at our first meeting.
Marlowe, did you get him? Do you know who it was?
No, I don't. Now relax a minute, Riker, and think. Who could possibly object to you and Nancy getting married?
But that's just it. There's nobody I know of, Mr. Marlowe, and I'm positive that the same is true of Nancy.
All right, now tell me, where does Nancy live?
In a villa at 1428 North Havenhurst Drive, number 12.
Mm-hmm.
But I've already been there, and she's gone.
Were you inside?
No, the door was locked. But, Mr. Marlowe, I thought you had specific plans for this evening.
I do. But from the way things stack up right now, they've got a better chance of keeping than Nancy Marshall. Now, look, go back to your place in Beverly Hills, stay away from frosted glass windows, and wait till you hear from me. We're real lucky, Mr. Riker. It still might turn out to be a happy New Year. When Riker left the office, I called Lieutenant Ibarra at police headquarters. And after being told that it would take at least a half hour to get my kind of lead out of the 7-Eleven I had on the pickup truck's license, I headed for Nancy's villa on North Havenhurst, where it took me 10 minutes to outsmart the catch on the back door. Inside, except for a carelessly overturned box of old snapshots, which meant nothing to me, and a lot of half-open drawers and closets, I was no place. And in the kitchen, where there was a full cup of cold coffee next to an open newspaper, the setup was almost the same. But not quite. because on the front page of the paper there was a banner story complete with pictures that shouted the news of three men who had broken out of the state penitentiary that morning. And one of them, a man named Steve Doyle, had a face that I'd seen only minutes ago on one of the snapshots in the overturned box. I grabbed the paper and started back to check with the snapshot once again for good measure. But the second I stepped into the living room, I stopped.
Hello. I don't believe I know you.
Oh, the voice matched the lady perfectly. She was tall, beautiful brunette, about 30. Wearing a beige metallic wool jersey that covered more curves than a ride on a roller coaster. But the large monogrammed A on her purse meant that this was not the woman who had planned to marry Paul Riker.
I said I don't believe I know you.
The name is Arthur Murray. You're late for your rumble lesson.
Oh, never mind the jokes, bright boy. It's a waste of your time and mine.
All right, then we'll play it very straight. Name is Philip Marlowe. I'm a private detective, and I'm working for a very worried man. Now you, what's your connection with Anthony Marshall?
I'm just, shall we say, an old acquaintance, that's all.
Not enough. I'll prime the pump some more. I was hired to find Nancy, who seems to be in a lot of trouble. And coincidentally in trouble on the same day that Steve Doyle breaks out of stir. Now once more, exactly where do you fit in?
I don't think I'll tell you, Mr. Marlowe. If you don't mind.
Well, pearl handled, huh? How very chic.
But deadly. Now get in that closet there, Marlowe. Go on.
All right. Just so we don't go through this same routine when we meet again, and we will. Who are you?
You don't listen very carefully, Marlowe. I've already told you that I'm an old acquaintance. It's the season for them, remember? Now get in there and shut up.
Nancy Marshall's villa was post-war construction at its worst, closets included. So I didn't stay tucked away with the mothballs any longer than it takes to say old acquaintance. The minute I kicked my way out, I went right for the telephone and my only 100% bona fide lead, the number 711.
This is Lieutenant Ibarra.
Marlowe, Ibarra. Anything for me on that license number?
Oh, yeah. If you're sure it was a pickup truck, the chances are pretty good that it either belongs to a party named Maurice J. Calder at 409 South Main, or one Jerome Graff, 3221 and a half Melrose Avenue.
Check.
What's up, Phil? Anything I might be interested in?
That depends. Ever hear of a guy named Steve Doyle?
One of that gang that broke out this morning?
The very same. Matter of fact, he's probably driving that pickup truck right now.
Oh.
But look, Ibarra, I think I know what I'm doing, so how about letting me run this end of it until I get stuck?
Well,
there's a girl named Nancy Marshall mixed up in this, and a delay at this time might cost her life.
All right, I'll stay clear, Phil, for a while.
Good.
But just so you don't get too careless, remember, Doyle got out of jail this morning the hard way. Killed two guards.
Oh, fine.
Goodbye, Marlowe.
When I got the 409 South Main, I knew that my first choice had to be wrong, because Maurice J. Calder turned out to be a bankrupt junkman, and his pickup truck, which was loaded with everything including the kitchen sink, had three flat tires and hadn't moved in a week. So if the numeral 711 were going to live up to their reputation, Jerome Graff had to be my man. And that made the time to be careful now. Melrose was a tired cottage set back about 50 weed-covered feet from the sidewalk. And from the rusted sign, Jerry Graff, mechanic dangling at a crazy angle from a weather-beaten beam over the front door, I gathered that the place doubled as both Mr. Graff's living quarters and shop. I didn't see any truck out front, so I decided to try the alley in the rear before I knocked on any door. It was then that I noticed for the first time that I was being watched by a short man with a long face who was slouched against a nearby tree like a marionette with no strings attached.
If you're lost, mister, maybe I can help you.
Maybe. I was looking for a pickup truck. Seen one around?
A pickup truck?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Now, I wonder what that could be.
Well, it's a small deal, about a half a ton and... Oh, I get it. Okay, here. Here's five. Now my question.
Jerry Graff owns a pickup truck, but it ain't here. It's been out since dark. But Jerry's in. He's working late tonight.
Working at what? Come on, you got your five? Talk.
Okay. It ain't no secret. Jerry's a nursemaid for one-armed bandits.
Slot machines, huh? Is that his record?
Yeah. He used to be a big boy with them, too.
But times have changed. Now he just works on them for other guys.
What other guys?
Oh, mister, I wouldn't answer that for even another five. I wouldn't stay in business very long if I did. But I'll tell you one thing for free in case you're going to visit, Jerry.
What's that?
Watch out for him. He's a very nasty man.
Thanks, but I can take care of myself, Buster.
What do you want?
Information. Where's your pickup truck, Graf?
Somebody stole it, but he didn't leave his card. Why, what are you, a private dick?
That's right, but one that works close to the law. So why don't we call the boys in blue and tell them all about it?
The cops? No, and wait a minute. I don't like the law pattern around here. Come on in, I'll tell you what you want to know.
Let's not skip any of the details, huh? Like, for example, the name Steve Doyle?
Doyle? I don't know. Well, okay, fella, you win. The story goes something like this.
Want to try again?
Maybe a monkey wrench will convince you.
You don't throw any straight in your talk, Graf. Come on. What do you say? Do we place the wall? Come on, talk. Come on. Come on.
Wait on it. I'll talk.
All right.
I've had enough.
Go ahead. So far, I know a girl named Nancy Marshall's in some kind of trouble because Steve Doyle broke out of the pen this morning. Now, you fill in the blank.
Oh, sure. Why not? Oh, Steve Doyle, he used to be crazy about Nancy, but she didn't go for him. Then about a year ago, a little more maybe, Steve got picked up for knocking over a grocery store. He figured he was caught because Nancy tipped the law to get him out of her hair.
Now he's out to get Nancy for revenge, is that it?
Yeah, that's it. And anyone who's close to her gets the same treatment.
Now, Chummy, now tell me, was Doyle here? Is he the one who's driving a pickup truck?
Yeah, but it wasn't my idea. He shoved a gun in my face, said we were old friends, and asked for the keys.
You know where he is now?
No, but if I did, I'd keep it to myself. Doyle's full of hate, brother. You can count on that. Now, what do you say about clearing out of here?
Just as soon as I find out one more thing. Now, there's another girl mixed up in this. She's a brunette with a lot of curves and the initial A. Calls herself an old acquaintance of Nancy's. Any idea who she is?
No, not the slightest.
You're a liar, Graf, and if I had time, I'd beat the truth out of you.
No, you haven't, believe me, because if you don't hustle, mister, when you do catch up with Nancy Marshall, you're going to catch up with a corpse. Nothing more.
When I got outside, two things stood out in my mind like a pair of cleats at Carnegie Hall. First, my client's fiancée was not the most innocent dame in greater Los Angeles. And second, I wasn't going to get any place until I could locate the old acquaintance. But then, just as I started for my car, the slouch who had sold me the dirty thumbnail sketch on Jerry Graf came running toward me.
Hey, mister! Did everything work out all right? I was called away on some other business or I'd have been here waiting.
Waiting for what?
Well, you know, in my game, I now and again give a guy a little more dope than he bargained for, and in that case, I sometimes end up with a bonus, so to speak.
Well, right now, we're about even. But if you can tell me anything about a beautiful brunette whose first name starts with an A, I'll give you a bonus that'll keep you in beer and pretzels from now until the 4th of July.
A name that begins with an A?
Yeah.
Hey, she visited with Graf this morning, maybe?
Yeah, it's possible. Come on, think hard.
She's kind of tall, dresses like $1 million bucks.
That's right. Now, what's her name? Here, look. $20 bill.
Mm.
Her name, what is it?
It's, I got it. Adrian Starr, 1312, Lookout Mountain Road.
How do you know that?
It was on the registration card in her car. I took a peek while she was... Trouble at Graf's. I'll take my 20. Goodbye.
Beat it up the walk to Graf's, and when I got inside, I found exactly what I expected. Doubled up on the floor in the middle of a lot of oily machine parts and still holding his stomach with both hands was Jerome Graf, a very dead man. I started for a telephone to call Lieutenant Ibarra, but then I noticed something small and gold lying a few feet away from the body. When I picked it up, I saw it was an ornamental buckle, the kind that a lady might wear on a coat. So I decided to skip Lieutenant Ibarra for the time being and call my client instead.
Hello?
This is Marlowe, Riker.
Oh, yes, Marlowe. What is it? What have you found out?
Quite a bit. But first, I've got to know one thing. Does Nancy Marshall have a gold belt buckle?
A gold belt buckle?
Yeah.
Why, yes, she does on her black coat. But what about it, Marlowe? What does it mean?
I'm not sure, Mr. Riker. But it may mean that Nancy Marshall just killed a man.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. But first, by this time, a week from tonight, Jack Benny will have made his first broadcast exclusively on the CBS network. Starting next Sunday, you'll find Jack here with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, Don Wilson, and all the others who have made the Jack Benny Show a regular Sunday evening delight for millions of Americans. Just for fun, the Jack Benny kind of fun, make a New Year's resolution to hear the Jack Benny Show every Sunday starting a week from tonight, January 2nd, over these same CBS network stations.
Benny premiered on a new network.
Yes, and we just celebrated his death. Was just the celebration of his death was just a few days ago.
The celebration.
I think he died on the 26th.
You mean the anniversary of his death?
Yeah.
I'm hoping nobody's celebrating. Not even Rochester.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder how much money CBS had to put out to get Jack Benny on their network.
Well, quite a few. They also promised him television, and not that he wouldn't have on NBC, but CBS gave him, I guess, a solid timeline for it. And his last years on radio were really good. Even his very last year was actually kind of a best of Benny, a year of repeats. Absolutely great shows.
Well,
NBC did have that long contract with Milton Berle, so perhaps they couldn't afford both of them.
And Bob Hope, yeah. And I think that's what they were doing. They had basically a lifelong contract with Bob Hope and Milton Berle, and it could be they gave those contracts because they didn't want to risk losing them to CBS.
So the Philip Marlowe character was portrayed by Humphrey Bogart and Robert Mitchum. Was there anybody else?
In the movies, you mean? Don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there were other renditions of Philip Marlowe. Yeah.
Yeah. Philip Marlowe. Did this actor, Gerald Moore, did he ever do it on the movies or television or any of that, or just radio?
Don't know. He did it on radio. He also did an audition for, in 1955, he auditioned for the Johnny Dollar when they were going to go Monday through Friday, and they went with Bob Bailey because they were both had just been released. He had been released from Philip Marlowe, and Bob Bailey had been released from Let George Do It. And he did the recording is out there of the audition program. But Gerald Moore didn't get the pro, and thank goodness Bob Bailey did. What a great Johnny Dollar he was on the radio.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
I don't know who wrote this quote, but there's a Philip Marlowe quote that came from Humphrey Bogart. She tried to sit in my lap while I was standing up. What?
Whoa.
What?
That
the,
sounds
what
kinky.
The heck?
To answer your question. Yeah. To answer your question, Gar, Humphrey Bogart played him in The Big Sleep in 1946. However, William Powell
and
played Philip Marlowe in Murder, My Sweet in 1944. In 1946, the movie Lady in the Lake. Looks like Robert Montgomery.
Ed Mitchum. Oh,
okay.
Robert Montgomery, that was 1946. The Brasher Doubloon, maybe George Montgomery. How about that?
Is that Elizabeth Montgomery's dad?
I believe James Garner played him in
Robert Montgomery was Elizabeth Montgomery's dad.
I believe James Garner played him in a movie called Marlowe in 1969.
Ooh, okay. I did not remember that one. Must have been a made for TV. I did not remember.
How about Elliot Gould in The Long Goodbye as Philip Marlowe in 1973?
Ooh.
Robert Mitchum, Farewell, My Lovely, in 1975. And the remake of The Big Sleep.
I think Philip Carey, who was the head head ranger in the TV Western Laredo, did it as well.
There you go. There's a whole bunch of Philip Marlowe's.
CW, you said the head, and when you did it, I had been watching Quark, an old science fiction TV.
Oh, yeah.
Character in there,
yeah.
The head.
Quark.
Richard Benjamin starred in that, and each half hour episode was a parody of an hour long of the original series.
Right. Yeah,
oh my gosh! And the character, the Vegeton, the parody of
the
Vulcan, the Vegeton.
He was Mr. Spock, yeah, as a rutabaga or something like that. I don't know.
A rutabaga.
Oh,
wasn't that Dr. Smith was a rutabaga or something, or a celery?
They should have dropped that character.
Yeah.
Should have dropped Dr. Smith of an airlock episode 2. Get rid of that guy. Oh, it would have been a whole different series without him in it. It just would have been.
Yeah, but it might not have lasted past the first season.
Or it might have, turned
it was,
into
it,
something.
No, it was definitely his uniqueness that brought viewers in. And
yep.
Even Irwin Allen noted that too, and Jonathan Harris went to Irwin Allen and said, they're got some cast members a little upset about the way the show is going, and he said, well, it shouldn't be because you've given them 3 more years on this show.
Yeah.
So even Irwin Allen accepted his participation and what he brought to the show as extending its life.
Yep. Irwin Allen threw up his hands and said, hey, Jonathan, why don't you write the script? We don't even care. Here, go ahead.
There you go.
Enough.
Oh. We do need to move on. We've got a lot of radio.
Okay, we got a lot of radio.
Let's wrap up the old acquaintance, Philip Marlowe.
And now with our star, Gerald Bohr, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Old Acquaintance.
When I told Paul Riker that the chances were good that his bride-to-be had just knocked off a slot machine operator, my client reacted like I'd kicked him in the stomach. When he caught his breath again, he started telling me I was wrong and didn't stop until I hung up on him. Next thing on the agenda was that call to Lieutenant Ibarra.
Lieutenant Ibarra speaking.
Marlowe again, Lieutenant.
Oh, did you find the owner of that pickup truck, Phil?
Yeah, I found him, Ibarra. I'm calling from his shop now. I had a talk with a guy. It was Jerry Graff.
What do you mean, was Jerry Graff?
Well, somebody came in here and shot him just after I left. He's dead.
Dead?
He knew Steve Doyle all right, but I'm pretty sure Doyle didn't kill him, Ibarra.
No? Then who did? Any idea, Marlowe?
Well, looks very much like my client's fiancé, Nancy Marshall. Uh-huh. I still don't know where she is or how it all fits together, but look, I got a lead on an old acquaintance of Nancy's named Adrian Starr. She lives up on Lookout Mountain Road.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't hear from me in, say, an hour, you might check. Number 1312, that's my next stop.
Okay, just be sure it's not your last stop. Goodbye.
I drove up Laurel Canyon to Lookout Mountain. The only sign of life was a young couple parked where they could look down at the city lights, if they wanted to. I backed into a bushy driveway across Adrian Starr's bungalow and stopped. It was small, modern, and looked deserted. Except for one dim light upstairs. I was about to get out and verify that when a pair of headlights flashed down the road and a yellow convertible swept to a halt in front of the place. It was Adrian Starr who got out. She started up the walk toward her front door, stopped suddenly, and then ran back to her car and drove off again. I kept the yellow convertible in sight. When it turned on Havenhurst and stopped in front of Nancy Marshall's villa, I pulled up in time to see Adrian step inside and close the door. So I followed her.
Marlowe, what do you want?
I want to know what Jerry Graff means to you, Adrian.
I don't know any Jerry Graff, so it means nothing.
Come on, stop it. You went down to his shop to see him this morning. I thought you might like to know that he's dead. Mm-hmm. The cops are hungry for anybody who so much as knew his name. Maybe I better come inside and talk it over, don't you think?
Yeah, maybe you better. Just a minute.
Thanks. Hey, it's dark. Why don't you turn on more lights?
Because I like it this way.
Okay. But, honey, if you've still got that pearl-handled popcorn of yours, let's leave it out of the conversation. And let's make it straight. Why'd you drop in on Graff this morning?
Because I knew that sooner or later Steve Doyle would head there. I had to know if Steve intended to leave town or was still determined to get his crazy revenge.
And all for Nancy Marshall, huh? You know, you're sticking your neck out quite a ways just for old time's sake, baby. Steve Doyle's a pretty tricky guy to mix with at this point.
You can say that again, Phil.
Steve? Oh, Steve.
Steve Doyle.
That's right. Who are you, mister?
Marlowe, private detective.
Sit down over there, private detective. Keep your hands out of your pockets. I don't like you because you're half cop, but play it smart and you won't get hurt. Well, Adrian, like old home week, huh?
Oh, it's been a long time, Steve.
Yeah, it sure has. Where is she, Adrian? Where's Nancy?
I don't know, Steve.
You're lying to me. This is her place. You got in with a key. You've been down to see Graff. You know where she is, all right. So tell me and tell me fast.
Steve, listen, forget it. Forget about Nancy. This revenge will only get you in the gas chamber. Please, let's get away. We can still make it across the border. Please take me with you. I love you, Steve, just like I always have, even when you threw me over for Nancy.
Shut up. Just tell me where Nancy is. Come on, Adrian.
I don't know, Steve.
Stop it, Doyle.
Where is she?
Steve, you're hurting me.
Doyle.
Don't move, Marlowe. All right, Sal, I told you to behave. I've been through a lot, and I'm tired, and I'm running out of time. You're getting in my hair, and that's bad.
Oh, no, Steve, don't.
I won't shoot him. I can't afford the noise. I can give him something just as good. Now, Adrian, try again. Where's Nancy?
I don't know, Steve.
Come on, where is she?
I don't know.
Where's Nancy?
I don't know.
Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?
I couldn't remember where I was or how long I'd been lying there, but gradually I got the crazy idea that I was being robbed by a very unhappy crook, because I was sure that somebody was crying and going through my pockets at the same time. Oh, I tried to open my eyes, but all I could see was a little gold buckle danced back and forth in front of me. When it finally disappeared altogether, I rolled over and hauled myself up onto my knees. And then it all came rushing back to me. I'd been in Nancy Marshall's villa with Steve Doyle and Adrian Starr on me. Only they were gone now, and I was alone. I heard a car start outside, so I got on my feet and made it along the wall to the door. It was Adrian, and she was behind the wheel of my coupe.
Stay away from me, Marlowe.
Where's Doyle?
He took my car. He's gone up to Nancy. I've got to stop him, Marlowe, so get out of the way.
Somehow I managed to jump back just in time to keep from getting a press job with the tread of my own fist tires. And it took 10 minutes of steady concentration to get it through my throbbing head that Adrian had actually stolen my car and was gone. Oh, the cold air must have helped me, because one thought led to another, and I finally began to separate the facts from the fancies. I hadn't dreamed all I thought I had. And when I realized that, the whole idea hit me, and hit me hard. I knew that I'd better get out to Lookout Mountain in a hurry. I made it to Sunset, hailed a cab, and collapsed in it.
Where to, mister?
Lookout Mountain Road. Make it fast.
Oh, it's rugged in this traffic. 2 years easy, no?
Here's $10. Does that help? It's important.
Oh, it helps plenty. I know a great shortcut, a new road that's not yet finished. How are you on bumps?
You more won't matter, pal. Let's go. When it was over, I felt like I'd crossed the country on a pogo stick. But the cab driver was a genius, and with a shortcut, we made the distance to Lookout Mountain in less than 10 minutes. When we got near the place, I sent the cab back down the hill out of danger and went the rest of the way on foot. As I got within sight of Adrian's bungalow, I saw Steve Doyle getting out of the yellow convertible. I ran up to the house, tried the door. It was locked.
Nancy, where are you? I know you're in there, baby. I'm going to find you. I'm about to take this joint apart. We've got some old business to settle, remember?
So have we, Doyle. What? Drop that gun. Stand still.
Okay, sucker. You
won't need that gun anymore, Doyle. Just kick it over there out of the way.
Someday I'll get you for this fella.
I doubt it, Steve. You're all finished, but you're too thick-headed to see it. Well, I guess it's time to relax and wait for Adrian. Then we call the cops,
Adrian,
huh?
Adrian just arrived, Marlowe. Don't what? Turn around or I'll kill you.
Adrian.
There we are, Marlowe. Touch your gun back here to me. Come on now. Better. Oh, Steve. Steve, are you hurt bad, darling? Can you make it to the car?
I'll try, Adrian. Got me on this side. It's bad.
Oh, Steve. Hurry, darling. Hurry. I'll be with you in a minute.
I'll make it okay.
Well, Marlowe?
Yeah.
Okay, Adrian.
Tell me one thing first, Marlowe. Did Steve get to Nancy?
No.
You killed Graff in time to shut him up, too, huh? So Steve will never know the truth, will he, Adrian? Could be it was you who crossed him and sent him to prison.
You'll never find out. Not now. And you'll never realize how much I love him, either. That's why I did it, Marlo. It was the only way I could hold him for myself. And I was willing to wait. Can you understand that?
Yeah. I guess I can. Too bad a love like yours has to be wasted on a guy like Steve. You'll never get away, honey. Not with him. You'll never make it.
Maybe not. But if he goes out, at least I'll be with him, Marlo. And that's the way I want it.
Well, if you're going to do anything, Adrian, you better get it over with fast. That siren's a friend of mine. He's coming here.
Adrian!
Coming, Steve. You're a good guy, Marlo, and a smart one. Just don't follow us, that's all. So long, Marlo. Happy New Year.
Pull out of here. Who is in it?
Steve Doyle and Adrian Starr, Ibarra.
That road makes a horseshoe turn. That'll bring them out down below us there at that junction. I've got one of those streets blocked, but the other one's wide open.
Look, Ibarra, there they are. She's stopping at the crossroad.
Yeah, they've spotted my men down there. She's turning around. They're heading out the other way. She must be crazy, Marlo. They'll never make that curve at that speed.
They're not slowing down, Ibarra. She's heading straight for that stone wall.
Well, Speed, that's it. It's all over. They're both dead when the boys got to them. Killed instantly. By the way, how's your head feel now? Any better?
I'm okay, Burr.
Did you take care of Nancy Marshall all right?
Yeah, she locked herself upstairs. Sent her home to Paul Reich on the squad car. Driver hurries. They can still be married on New Year's Eve.
You had a pegged as Jerry Graff's killer earlier tonight, Marlo. What made you change your mind?
Well, I found a gold buckle near Graff's body, Bar. I figured it was a fancy little belt buckle that Nancy had dropped. But I saw exactly the same buckle when I was coming to after Doyle hit me on the head. And it wasn't on a belt. It was on a shoe. Adrian's shoe. It was the mate of the one I'd found.
Once you knew Adrian Starr killed Graff, you put the rest of it together. Is that it?
Uh-huh. See, for a price, Graff helped Adrian double-cross Steve. She had to kill him to keep him from talking. She hid Nancy out for the same reason. If she knew that if Steve ever got to Nancy, he'd learn the truth.
I wonder why she didn't kill Nancy, too.
I think she intended to, Ibarra.
And she did it all, really, because she loved the guy too much. Strange deal, Marlo, right to the end. You know, she didn't have a chance to make that curve down there the way she was driving.
Not even if she wanted to make it, Ibarra.
Yeah. Well, it's 5 minutes to midnight, Phil. Happy New Year, fella. I want to see a lot of you in 1949.
Same to you, Lieutenant. Good night. After Ibarra and the others left, I stayed up on Lookout Mountain and watched the new year come to Los Angeles. A new year. Didn't seem to change things much, at least on the surface. Somewhere down the road, a gang struck up Auld Lang Syne. I thought again of Adrian Starr. A girl who loved not wisely, who had called herself an old acquaintance. Yeah, I'd never forget her. As I walked back to my car, the city was ringing out the old and ringing in the new. And I wished then that someplace on everybody's list of resolutions, they'd make room for that cup of kindness they were singing about. And then a guy could say, Happy New Year, and mean it.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman McDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Gloria Blondell, Edgar Berrier, David Ellis, Lou Krugman, and Stan Waxman. Lieutenant Ibarra was played by Jeff Corey. The special music was by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
They all knew he was aboard the yacht when it exploded and sank. And everybody called his death an accident. Yeah, that is everybody except the corpse himself. He said it was murder.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The problem with paying for information is you get what you pay for.
There, you get a Fogsbane squeak for that. My New Year's
gift. There should be a thud on there as the door closes.
Fogsbane door only opens. It does not close.
Yeah.
Yes. We do not close our doors here at Erie House.
That crash noise when the car went into the wall, that... I love that. That noise.
Like
there was a Howie scream.
Yes.
Yeah. So many great car crashes in radio.
Absolutely. Oh, and our femme fatale, a Gloria Blondell, was the sister of Joan Blondell.
There's a nice Howie
scream.
See,
now that could use a car crash.
There it is.
That could use a car crash at the end, too.
Yes, it could. We got another tale for you tonight, this time from the Whistler. The Whistler.
Whistler. Yeah.
We do.
Another tale around.
We don't know where. Go ahead. I was going to say, we don't know where he comes from. We just know he whistles.
Yes. On a train.
Yeah.
On a train. That also whistles.
Yes. No, he's not on a train. Yes. The mysterious traveler's on a train.
Somebody, well, maybe they met in a dark alley. We don't know.
They could be. On a pier.
Could be.
In the dark.
As long as there was
a
shadow
fog
for him to hide behind, yeah.
That's right.
And a shadow.
So let's get started with Evening Stroll with an original broadcast date of...
January 1st, 1950.
And now stay tuned for the program that has rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. The Signal Oil program, The Whistler, transcribed by the Signal Oil Company for New Year's to enable the entire production staff of The Whistler to spend New Year's Day at home with their...
New batteries, Gar.
Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invite you to sit back and enjoy another strange story.
Stand up.
For extra driving pleasure, the signal to look for is the yellow and black circle sign that identifies Signal service stations from Canada to Mexico. And for Sunday evening listening pleasure, the signal to listen for is this whistle that identifies the Signal Oil program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's strange story. Evening Stroll.
Rumor, gossip, no matter how idly begun, may often come to a violent conclusion. Its pernicious content can twist and distort the mildest of deeds, until with a deadly force fed and made strong by repetition, its weight can smash lives. The venom of rumor, gossip, is always around. Defense against it is pitifully inadequate, and no one is immune. Not even Professor Malcolm Dunn on New Year's Eve, strolling across the darkened campus, puffing quietly on his pipe. At the moment, he seemed pleased with the way things had turned out. The rather embarrassing session a few days ago with Dean Wilson was forgotten, and his thoughts were only of the future, his future at the university. At the library, he paused, debated for a moment if he should turn here and take the shortcut home. Perhaps it was because he wanted more time to be alone, more time to savor the prospects of a bright future, that he decided against the shortcut, even though it was getting late, and continued along the tree-lined street, entered the residential district of the university town.
Oh, Professor! Professor!
Oh, Miss Crandall. Miss.
Hi. Mind if I walk along with you?
Of course not.
Isn't it a wonderful night?
Yeah.
Cool, crisp.
Mm-hmm.
Just think. In another few hours, a new year will be with us.
On your way to a little celebration?
I just left one. Horribly dull, really.
Oh?
I may not even go back. Jerry's in one of those moods again.
Jerry?
Jerry Hayes. He's just a friend. He took me to the party. We had words.
So you decided to take a walk?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Professor?
Yes?
I heard Dean Wilson had you in for a long talk the other day.
That's right, Midge.
About me?
About you.
I'm sorry I've caused you so much trouble. But I'm not sorry I ever fell in love with you.
Midge, I'm old enough to be your...
Oh, please, don't say that.
But you don't understand.
Some things I do, Professor. For instance, this one-sided romance isn't any good. I've caused you nothing but trouble. I realize you can't afford to get mixed up with any of your students.
It isn't as though I'd given you any encouragement. True, we've seen quite a bit of each other.
Oh, you've been very proper about the whole thing all along. My fault, all of it. I admit that. But I can't help it. I'm in love with you.
It's very flattering, Midge, but...
Still, you wish I weren't so obvious about the whole thing.
Well...
I've never once told anyone that you were in love with me.
I believe you, Midge. But don't you see, there are some people who take a thing like this, gossip it around. The rumors begin to spread. First thing, there's a nice scandal.
Already started, hasn't it? I mean, that's why the dean wanted to talk to you.
I don't mind telling you, that session with the dean was more than a little embarrassing.
I'm terribly sorry.
Well, it's all over now. I've explained everything to his satisfaction, I'm sure.
All this hasn't ruined everything for you, has it?
Hmm?
I mean, you're taking over the history department when Professor Ferris leaves next month.
No, thank heavens. This new position is very important to me, Midge. To my wife, too. It means a great deal to both of us.
It means a lot to me, too. I hope I'm around when it happens.
What do you mean?
I'm leaving the university.
Oh, you are?
Yes. Going to New York. The call of the theater, you know. Father has a friend who has a friend who's a producer. And, well, it'll be a small part to begin with.
I'm sorry you're going to leave us.
Are you? Well, really?
Of course. But I'm certain you'll become a very great actress someday.
Thank you. People say I'm acting all the time anyway. Well, here's my apartment house.
Oh, I'll see you to the door.
Oh, well, how do you like that? No key. I've locked myself out again.
Sure it isn't in your purse there?
Nope. Now, how am I going to get in? House manager's at a party, probably won't be home for hours.
Well, you just can't sit out here all night. Isn't there some way we could...
There is. My apartment's around back, on the ground floor. The screen on the bedroom window's loose. Trouble is, I'm not very good at climbing through windows. If somehow you... Oh, no, I couldn't ask you.
Well, when a lady's in distress...
Oh, thanks, Professor. We'll go in the front way here. The lobby door's always unlocked.
You follow Midge into the apartment house, down the long corridor, and out to the back of the building. With little effort, you manage to remove the screen from her bedroom window, climb over the sill, and drop into the darkened apartment.
Okay, Professor?
Right.
The light switch is in the alcove, straight ahead.
I'll find it. Oh.
You all right, Professor?
I guess so. You forgot to warn me about the coffee table.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll be right in.
You make your way slowly across the room and finally find the light switch. You open the hall door, return to the window, and replace the screen as Midge steps into the apartment and closes the door behind her.
You're a lifesaver, Professor. Hurt yourself on the coffee table?
Fractured a few bones, that's all.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, and look, you've got dust all over your coat.
No harm done.
Oh, I wouldn't be too sure. Looks like a stain of some sort. Why don't you take your coat off, Professor? I'll get some cleaning fluid.
Oh, don't bother,
Ned. Oh, no bother, really. It'll only take a minute.
Well, all right. There we are.
Just drop it on the chair there.
Okay.
Oh, now what? Excuse me a moment, Professor.
Hello, Midge.
Oh, Jerry.
I'm sorry I acted the way I did, Midge. I guess you had every right to walk out on me. I see you have company.
Yes. Now, can't we discuss what happened at the party some other time, Jerry?
Sure. Sure we can. Guess maybe I wasn't so wrong after all, huh? Maybe those rumors...
Jerry, please.
Okay.
Good night.
Night, Midge. Good night, Professor Dunn.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Professor, but... Jerry, he's such a child.
Midge, that quarrel you had with Jerry at the party tonight... Have anything to do with me?
Well, yes, in a way.
Look, he seems like a nice sort of chap. Why don't you call him
back? No, no, I'll see him tomorrow. Now, do sit down, Professor.
Midge.
Yes?
Mind telling me something?
Uh-uh.
Did you really lock yourself out tonight?
What do you think, Professor?
I think I'd better be running along. Good morning, Mrs. Dunn.
Oh, morning, Malcolm. Breakfast will be ready in a moment.
Fine. Say, I must have been asleep when you came in last night, Claire. How was the party?
Oh, very nice. The Donaldsons were so disappointed you didn't come, but I explained you just couldn't.
Good.
You go to bed early?
No. I work for a few hours. Then I went out for a walk. A long walk. By the way, Mrs. Dunn, how about a kiss for a happy new year for your husband,
Happy new year to you, Professor. Now you sit down. Read your paper. Oh, Malcolm.
Yes?
Isn't Midge Crandall one of your students?
Why, yes. She is.
Her picture's there on the front page.
What? Why, so it is.
Someone shot her last night at her apartment.
Shot her?
Yes, they've taken her to the hospital. They don't know if she'll live or not.
Because this is New Year's Day, Signal Oil Company has asked me to skip the regular message about Signal gasoline in order to bring you a few extra chuckles with these limericks. Mrs. Don Bonacquista of Phoenix, Arizona, will start her new year with a $20 Signal gasoline book for this limerick. Like the man on the flying trapeze, you can drive with the greatest of ease. If you'll only be smart and right from the start... Say, fill it with Signal gas, please.
Signal, signal, signal gasoline. Your car will go far with no other gasoline.
Tonight's second $20 Signal gasoline book goes to Mrs. Rod Duby of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, for this limerick. A man with a love for smooth driving found his car needed reviving. He tried Signal Gas, and now he can pass all road tests without even striving.
Signal, Signal, Signal gasoline. Your car will go far with Go Brother gasoline.
We regret that we couldn't start the new year for all of you with a $20 Signal gasoline book, but we do hope that happy, safe driving will fill your new year with miles of smiles.
It's a shock, isn't it, Professor? Your hands tremble as you hold the morning newspaper. Stare down at the photograph of Midge Crandall on the front page. The story is all there. The shooting at her apartment. And as you read through the first few paragraphs, you realize it must have happened only a short time after you left the girl's apartment. Your first impulse is to pick up the phone and call the police. Tell them you were with Midge Crandall last night at her apartment. But suddenly you realize it won't help the police find the guilty person. It would only involve you as well as other innocent people needlessly. And after your conversation with Dean Wilson a few days ago concerning Midge, the gossip about the two of you, you know you can't afford to become involved in the shooting. Somehow you manage to get through breakfast, and then afterward you leave the house and go for a long walk. You need time to think, don't you? Perhaps in some way you can assist the police and help them find out who shot Midge. Then as you're strolling along the walk in front of the science building, one of the students joins you.
Say, Professor, you heard about the shooting last night?
Yes, I heard about it, Bill.
Sure knocked me for a loop. I know Midge pretty well. She's a nice kid. Tough. It's a real tough break.
Yes, it is.
Too bad that Simpson guy didn't get a better look at the man who was with Midge.
The Simpson? Who?
The witness. He was sitting in a parked car right across the street from Midge's apartment, waiting for somebody. He told police he remembered seeing a man going into the building with Midge.
I see.
I didn't give much of a description of the guy. Medium build, slender, well-dressed. Said he might recognize him if he saw him again, though. Well, here's where I turn off, Professor. See ya.
Yes. Yes, of course, Bill.
Happy New Year, Professor. Hey, Jerry, wait up, fella.
Jerry. The sound of that name spins you around, doesn't it, Professor? You watch Bill join another youngster. See them hurry across the campus toward the village. But he isn't the Jerry you're thinking of, is he? Suddenly you remember the young man who was at the door of Midge's apartment last night. Jerry Hayes. The young man who saw you there with Midge. And you wonder why he hasn't been to the police to tell them about it.
May I speak with Jerry Hayes, please?
Yeah, just a sec. Hey, you guys. Pipe down, will you? I can't hear a thing. Oh, what was that again?
Is Jerry Hayes there?
Oh, yeah, sure. Hold on. Hey, Jer, for you.
Who is it?
Beats me.
Hello?
Jerry, this is Professor Dunn.
Oh. Hello.
I'd like to talk to you, Jerry.
I figured you would.
Where could we meet?
Thing.
The path at the far end of the athletic field in 10 minutes. Is that all right?
Okay.
Uh-oh. I wonder what's gonna happen next. Did Jerry
do it? The infamous meeting. Infamous meeting.
With an old acquaintance of sorts.
Where's the goat with
I agree.
Yep.
My goat needs batteries. So saith the Dave.
It does. Yeah. Goat needs batteries.
That sounds disturbing.
Yeah, he's hurting.
Yeah, it's too bad those gasoline corporations don't give out commercials anymore where they give you a book. Of course, $20 that we pay for what, about about a cup of gasoline now?
Well, hell with that. They ought to give free samples.
Gas was a dime a gallon back in 40, whatever this was. So you get a little bit more gasoline out of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And the limericks people would come up with, let's see. I
this
once
was a
drove
man.
In with my truck.
Hey. Careful.
Oh,
I don't know.
Careful now.
Well,
careful.
Did they give away $20 for it? They gave away $20 worth? Is that right?
Yep, $20 worth.
Yep.
Okay. The Garculator says, in today's days and times, if you had $20 from 1950, it'd be worth $247.06. That's crazy.
Now, see, that's a couple gallons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It better be.
Yeah. And that can get you a couple of blocks down the street.
There you go.
Figuring gas back then was what, a nickel a gallon or something like that? I don't know.
Probably wasn't more than a quarter.
Yeah, I would say not. I have seen gas a dollar a gallon in my lifetime, so, and that was in the 80s? Yeah, in the 80s it was a buck a gallon, so it was even, it was probably down to 75 cents when I was a little kid. Yeah. A little ghoul, I guess.
A little ghoul.
Yeah.
That's what they said when he was born. Oh, it's a real ghoul we got here.
What a little ghoul. Give him some Batman comics, put him in the corner. That was it.
Oh. But we have another femme fatale who's got her claws into the professor, and now something's happened to her, and the poor professor is in trouble.
I think he is.
Wow. So I just did a check.
Yep.
On the year of my birth, the gas was 30 cents a gallon. Good grief. Now it's what, three times?
Oh, my
gosh.
I can't even buy peanut butter cups for that.
For 30 cents, you're not even allowed to look at gasoline.
I know. Yeah.
You could look at them change the price of the gas sign, yeah.
That's about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Which story have you
got
here?
I wonder back then, did they? Yeah. It is a tasty tale to turn over the new year.
Yep. So let's see if this professor gets out of this jam or if he gets pinned for it.
I think
marmalade,
there's jam
please.
All over his... Yeah.
It's marmalade.
Marmaladio.
Marmaladio.
I'll give that to you. There you go.
Which rhymes with David Spadio or something. I don't know. Here we go. This cat. Hey, cat.
It's a good question, Professor. Why didn't I go to the cops, huh? Suppose I ask you the same.
Listen, Jerry.
Sort of an embarrassing question, isn't it?
Why haven't you told them that I was there in the apartment?
Why haven't you? Something holding you back? Sure. And I know just what it is.
Do you?
Look, Professor, I don't want to get mixed up in this any more than you do. Why not forget about it?
Suppose Midge dies.
That wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be good at all. But we'd keep our mouths shut. I didn't see you. You didn't see me.
I don't know, Jerry. I don't think that'd be right.
I don't think there's anything for you to worry about, Professor. According to the newspapers, the police haven't found any clear prints on the gun.
Yes, Claire.
Hi, that was quite a walk you took. But I'm glad you're back home, Malcolm. There was a call for you.
Oh?
Dean Wilson's housekeeper called. Said to tell you he wanted you to come over.
Now?
Well, she sounded like it was rather important.
I see.
Come in, Professor Dunn. Come in.
Thank you, Mrs. Shaw.
The dean is in his study. I'm sure he'll see you in a few minutes. The lieutenant shouldn't be with him much longer.
The lieutenant?
Yes, Lieutenant Franklin, police department. They're in there with Mr. Simpson.
Simpson? He's the man who...
The witness. Police think the man Mr. Simpson saw last night might be the one who tried to kill Midge Crandall. Oh, isn't it terrible, Professor? That poor girl. I understand she's still in a coma.
Well, thank you very much, Dean Wilson. Sorry we had to take up so much of your time. Oh,
quite all right, Lieutenant.
Can't overlook anything, you know. Don't have very much to go on. Simpson here and I'll sort of roam around, if you don't mind.
No, of course not.
With luck, we might spot our man.
Quickly, you turn your back to
really
them, Professor.
Think it's
stare out the window.
Right here on
you
the
want to run, don't you? But right. Your legs refuse to act. And you pray that Simpson doesn't notice you.
Well, thanks again, sir.
Goodbye, Lieutenant.
Now let's go, Simpson.
Oh, and there you are, Malcolm.
Afternoon, sir.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
I just got here a moment ago.
Come in.
Terrible business, that. Terrible.
You heard, Malcolm? I think the man who shot Miss Crandall is here on our campus.
Yes, I heard. Any definite leads?
No.
Unfortunately, the witness Simpson hasn't been able to give a good description of the man he saw go into the apartment building with the girl.
Does Mr. Simpson think he can identify the man if he sees him again?
He seems to think so, yes. I, for one, certainly hope he's right. This thing must be solved, Malcolm. They've got to find that man.
Yes, of course.
Well, let's get on with it. I want to discuss several matters with you, Malcolm, about your new position. Hope you don't mind my calling you over today.
Oh, of course not.
And Professor Ferris will be leaving earlier than we expected, so it's important we get to these things as soon as possible.
Yes, sir.
For the remainder of the afternoon, you sit with Dean Wilson in his study. He's talking about your new position with the university. But your mind isn't on it, Professor. You keep thinking about the police lieutenant and the witness, Simpson. They're on the campus now, looking for the man who was with Midge Crandall last night. And you wonder how long you'll be able to stay out of their way. Finally, when you leave the dean, your mind is made up. You've reached a decision, haven't you? Yes. And there's only one thing you can do.
Yeah, what? Oh, hello, Professor. Come on in.
No, thanks. I just stopped by to see if Jerry Hayes was in.
Oh, no, he's down in the village. Well, he'll be back soon.
I see. Will you tell him I must see him immediately? It's very important.
Oh, sure, Professor.
Have him come to my house, 423 Oak Road.
Okay, I'll tell him.
You've made up your mind, haven't you, Professor? Hiding from the police isn't going to solve anything. Instead of helping them, you're wasting valuable time, throwing them off the track, while the guilty person remains at large. At your home, as you wait for Jerry to arrive, the nervousness has gradually left you, hasn't it? You're strangely calm, ready to face whatever happens. Then, as a battered convertible stops in front of your house and Jerry steps out, you dial police headquarters and ask for Lieutenant Franklin.
Yes, Professor Dunn?
Lieutenant, I have some information. It's about the Midge Crandall shooting.
Oh?
Would you come to my house right away? 423 Oak Road.
All right. I'll be there, Professor.
Malcolm.
Oh, yes, Claire. What is it?
Did I hear you just call the police?
That's right.
You said something about Midge Crandall.
Oh, excuse me. That's Jerry Hayes. I'll let him in.
Malcolm, what's this all about?
I'll explain in a moment, Claire.
How are you, Professor?
Come in, Jerry.
Hello, Mrs. Dunn.
How are you, Jerry? How's Janet? I haven't seen her in ages.
Oh, she's fine.
Janet?
Jerry's aunt is an old school chum of mine, Malcolm.
Never would have gotten into the university here if it hadn't been for the two of them, Professor. Guess I owe Janet and Mrs. Dunn a lot.
I see.
Now, Malcolm, what's this all about?
Yeah, what's up, Professor?
Jerry, I've called the police. They may not believe I had nothing to do with the shooting, but...
The police? Wait a minute, I thought we...
It's no use, Jerry. I want you to tell them all you know about this Midge Crandall affair.
Even that I saw your wife there?
What?
That's right, dear.
You mean you want me to tell the police I saw Mrs. Dunn come running out of Midge's apartment house last night?
Claire.
I admit it, Malcolm. I was there. I was the one.
New Year's Day is an appropriate day to take stock of one's blessings. So we of the Signal Oil Organization would like to take this opportunity to express our appreciation to all of you who have given us so much for which to be thankful. To you loyal Whistler fans whose continued preference for Signal products has helped us grow from a small start in one state into an organization serving six western states, we are genuinely grateful. To independent Signal dealers whose conscientious service has helped so much to keep customers and their cars happy, we are mighty appreciative. So that all of us in the Signal Oil family may continue to merit your friendship and your business, you can count on us to pursue our policy of making every Signal product and Signal service always finer and more complete. Throughout the new year, as for the past 19 years, we shall do everything in our power to make your stops at Signal stations, as well as your miles behind the wheel, happy ones.
It came as a staggering blow, didn't it, Professor? Your wife's admission that she had shot Midge Crandall. Yes, you'd been afraid to get in touch with the police because it meant admitting that you had been there in the apartment yourself. And you knew it would start the gossip again and involve other innocent people. Yet finally you decided to face the consequences. Tell the police that you were the man the witness Simpson had seen. So you would call Lieutenant Franklin, asked him to come to your house. Then too late you learned that your wife Claire had shot Midge.
You've got to believe me, Malcolm. I swear I didn't mean to do it.
Claire, why did you go over there?
I'd heard talk about you and Midge. I just had to see her.
But
she admitted it was all wrong, her fault, but she'd been very foolish.
Yes, but...
She kept telling me how much she loved you, and yet she couldn't have you. And then she picked up the gun. Malcolm, I didn't know what to do the way she acted. I suddenly got the crazy idea she was going to kill herself.
Oh, Claire, you don't know Midge. She was putting on an act.
I had to stop her. And when I tried to take the gun away, it went off. Oh, Malcolm, I didn't mean for her to get shot. I wouldn't have harmed that girl for the world.
But you ran. You left her.
I got outside the door of the apartment before I realized she might die if I didn't do something. Then I heard someone running down the hall. I knew the shot had attracted attention, that she'd be found immediately. Malcolm, and the police.
Look, Mrs. Dunn, they don't know you were there. You didn't mean to shoot Midge. We don't have to tell them a thing.
Wait a minute.
Jerry, suppose Midge dies. No, you'd better let the police in, Malcolm.
Good evening, Professor.
Come in, Lieutenant. Lieutenant, my wife, Jerry Hayes.
How do you do? Now, Professor, you said over the phone something about the...
Yes. Jerry here saw a woman hurry out of Miss Crandall's apartment house last night.
A woman, eh?
Yes.
So he saw a woman, and Simpson saw a man.
But, Lieutenant...
Yeah, a lot of people went in and out of that building last night, but it doesn't mean a thing.
What?
Miss Crandall came out of her coma a few minutes ago. Oh, she's going to be all right.
Oh, that's great. She's a wonderful girl.
Yeah, she was worried for fear we'd think one of her boyfriends had done it. Actually, it was just another one of those I didn't know the gun was loaded cases. Miss Crandall told us she shot herself by accident.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil. and fine automotive accessories. Remember, if you would like the fun of having your friends hear a limerick of yours on the Whistler, the address to which to send it is the Signal Oil Company, Los Angeles, 55, California. All limericks become the property of the Signal Oil Company. Those selected for use on the Whistler will be chosen by our advertising representatives on the basis of humor, suitability, and originality. So, of course, they must be your own composition.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Featured in tonight's transcribed story were Donald Woods, Barbara Eiler, Mary Lansing, and Gil Stratton, Jr. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Steve Hampton, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler
characters
portrayed on the Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember, at the same time next Sunday, another strange tale by The Whistler. On behalf of Signal Oil Company and the independent dealers who serve you, I want to express the hope that you have enjoyed your holidays and that your new year will be filled with peace, prosperity, and the good health with which to enjoy the many blessings in the good old USA. Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You guys give me the giggles. All right, that wraps up our second tale.
Excuse me, please. I'm just shining my bomb because it's not loaded.
Don't worry, it's not loaded. And here's another bomb. Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
The best way to avoid being in the wrong place at the wrong time is not to be there.
I'm too confused to have so a soundbite. I'm just too confused.
So profound. So profound.
You've done your job well.
My producer friend came up with an amazing credit that's seen on many of the horror movies that are shown on my little thing. And it's just one line. Also starring in the film, Bogus Canard, the Wonder Pony.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
Bogus Canard, yeah. It was all about dreams. Bogus Canard. And every time I see that, I get a giggle. What is this?
Just make sure you got enough marmaladio. That's the important thing.
That is the important
thing. Yeah, I got plenty. I stocked up. It's right next to the fruitcake.
No.
Isn't fruitcake something you pass around the family and no one ever really eats it? It's like that gift that, oh, God, I got to kill. It gets re-gifted about 80 times.
Weaponizing your fruitcake.
I think it was sometime in November. I did get a fruitcake, and I did imbibe it, and I enjoyed it. But it's not for everybody.
I heard they last for years. They last for years.
Years and years. They're like ho-hos. They don't have an expiration date.
Yeah.
Yeah, right up there with the ho-hos and Twinkies, especially the ones that are soaked in rum. They're cooked, and then they soak them in the rum.
Oh, yeah.
And then
they let them
sit. I mean...
I remember one time I was working for a company, I want to say about 15 years ago, somebody made rum cake with 151. Oh my gosh. And they brought it to work for a Christmas party, and we all got buzzed on this 151 rum cake. You could just smell the alcohol steaming off this cake.
But it cooks up, right? I thought it cooked off.
No,
I thought there wasn't.
It depends.
It doesn't cook off? Okay.
If you that after the way some rum cakes were made is once the rum cake was actually cooked and done, it was then soaked in rum and then left to sit. So
yes.
If you put, yeah.
Okay.
So there was no way.
I would think that would be a really wet cake. Wouldn't that be wet? Wouldn't it be?
Oh,
like,
it was very moist. It was very moist.
Who cares after the second? Who cares after the second bite? You know.
That's true.
Oh, okay.
Gee, that
I haven't had
it. Was kind of moist, wasn't it? Yeah. Hello.
You could have your cake and drink it too. New Duncan Hines, super moist.
And I got the good cake. You can only take two bites.
And you end up in tomorrow.
You'll be hearing
Speak
colors.
Of tomorrow. Speak of tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow, Dale?
Nothing. I'm just hanging around house and getting old. No, we are we're going to get the last laugh, so to speak, because we got comedy for you tomorrow night. Comedy. Radio programs regarding New Year's. What do we got here? How about Fibber McGee and Molly, Jack Benny, and a show called Taxi?
Out of South Africa.
Driving my
taxi.
Whenever I'm driving my taxi, I listen to Erie House Radio. Sometimes I even turn on the radio.
Magic radio. Magic radio.
That's a bad impression of Jim from Taxi.
So everyone, remember, have your toast and marmaladio at the ready for tomorrow.
Yep. And then what? Are we having a New Year's Eve horrible horror starring Gardegul?
No. I won't be back until January 7th.
January 7th? Dave, isn't that an important date?
It is. It's an anniversary of sorts.
It is. That was our very, very first. Very, very first. And I know Dave remembers which one, because he said, this one's a real thriller, Dale. You're going to like it. We're going to kick this off with a bang. And we did.
Ooh,
back on January 1st of 2017. That's right, almost 6 years ago. 2017, we played. What was it, Dave?
The Poltergeist by Art Obler.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was a real thriller. Scatty, too. And
I actually listened to that one with the lights out, and when it was over, I had to turn the lights on. I really did.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, hell, I was...
Last week,
I was probably a senior in high school when I first heard that.
It's a good one. It's a good one. If you get a chance, go back in the archives and listen to it. It's a very thrilling tale.
Cool.
I have it on one of the discs. I play old time radio programs in my car. I get them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
If I have a long drive, I get a chance to listen to the whole thing.
I have a funny Santa Claus anecdote.
Make it quick. We got about a minute.
How about we do it in the after party?
We can do that.
It won't take long, but it'll take longer than a minute.
Okay.
Join
us tomorrow, usual time, 6:30 Eastern, if you're joining us live, like Fogsbane does. And we'll be here with those wonderful comedic shows.
And we'll be listening to a wonderful podcast.
We haven't had Jack Benny in a while. I'm looking forward to it. And so is the lovely and delightful Mr. Vincent Price.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her and him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Yeah, watch that, Vincent.
Can you dig it?
I don't have a shovel, man. How am I going to dig it without a shovel, man?
Oh.
Yep.
Besides
the cool stuff we got from Gar, anybody else get anything like really cool for Christmas?
I got
my brother sent to me. Okay, go ahead.
I got the full release of the 50th anniversary Mego, World's Greatest Superhero action figures.
No way.
Yeah.
Nice.
Reprint of the sculpting and everything and the costumes and the boxes. And it was just like going back to 1972 and like, oh, my gosh, I got a Batman action figure. It was kind of neat.
Ooh, cool. Dave, you were going to tell us a cool gift.
I got two things. I got a radio dial clock. It looks like the old Zenith radio, like I actually have, but with my grandfather's. And it's a clock with a second hand and all in the green eye that opens up when you dial in the station. So that's pretty cool. And I have a new addition to our family of the goat and the pickle. I have my emotional support chicken. Rubber chicken.
An emotional support chicken.
It's got a little jacket on it, so I can take it into stores because it says right in there, emotional support chicken. So I can take it into stores with me, and they can't make me, take it back to the car.
I told them that they want us to start coming back to the office, you know what I mean? And I'm digging this work-at-home thing. And I said, well, I'd come back if I can bring in my emotional support tarantula. And they decided not. They stopped bothering me.
Can't understand it.
I know the way around stuff, boy.
There you go.
I know the tricks of the trade. Mm. Some of them.
As acceptable as tarantula is, you could have also said llama, and they would have said, okay, yeah, stay home.
Yeah, well, they might have loved the llama.
You could have said llama and say, but it's not housebroken.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there you go.
But he is my emotional support tarantula.
And UCW, did you receive anything for the holidays, whichever one you celebrate?
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, I got a certificate to go to, I haven't used it yet, to one of those bougie spas, where you get totally pampered. They manicure you and pedicure you and massage you and
how nice
and vaporize you and sonorize you and martinize you and
sanitize.
What comes back in the next chapter?
Pasteurize.
He is homogenized and
Simonized.
Simonized, Martinized.
That's right.
Mama-ladenized.
Cool.
How about that? Yeah.
I got a handful of cool stuff. My kids kind of went nuts. One of them you guys might have seen on my page. I know Dave saw it because he liked the picture. My wife got me this huge blanket and had Paladin's picture, my collie.
Oh, yes.
If you glance at it, it looks like a two-headed monster until you realize it's a dog laying on a picture of a dog. So he not only stole my couch, now he stole my blanket too, the little devil. But another cool thing they got me was a Zippo. I haven't had a Zippo lighter in years, but this Zippo lighter has artwork on it, and it is issue number 34 of Famous Monsters of Filmland with Dr. Jekyll, one of those great Basil Gogos drawings. Yeah, it's really cool. I don't want to use it too much because I'm afraid I'll wear off the picture. Or as much as I smoke, that might take about a week. And then as a gag gift, my daughter, this is awesome. She got me these tiny little, not tiny, they're maybe about 4 inches tall, these rubber chickens, okay? It's a stress toy. You turn it upside down, and you squeeze it, and out of this little aperture comes an egg. It looks like a sunny side up egg, an uncooked egg with a little yolk floating. It is really obscene, but it's supposed to be for stress relief. I think it's more for comic relief, but whatever. It's funny as hell. Well, that was our little gag.
Can you take it in the store? Like I can my emotional support chicken.
I don't know, but I bet you I could leave with a lot of free stuff if I went in with that chicken.
What, to get you out of there? What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just go. Take your chicken and go.
Just go.
You're offending everyone. Stop it. Oh, and a nice book. Oh, my daughter, she's the greatest. She's the one who massages my interests the most with a wonderful book about Ray Harryhausen and his life and his work and everything.
Ah,
a big,
cool.
Giant, one of them coffee table size books. And I love it. It's even better than the one I remember as a kid. I used to have to go to our downtown library. They had a book on it's called The Fantastic Films of Ray Harryhausen. And it was more of a picture book. They didn't really get into too many details. Here's a picture from this movie. Here's a picture from that movie from this year. Going way back to when he was making the Mother Goose animated. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but they're pretty cool. I think they're PD. I used to sneak them on Creepy Castle and even on Eerie House Television when there still was live stream. I miss live stream.
Domain.
How nice. That's a nice one.
Yeah.
So I ran across a letter to Santa from a little kid named Jeremy who has the Santa thing going on. And he can write. Now, it's not perfect writing. It's a young kid from Jeremy. Jeremy writes to Santa, "Dear Santa, I am writing, R-I-T-I-N-G, writing this on the day after Christmas, and I am very sad.
Uh-oh.
I only received one of the two presents I asked for. Since you ate my cookies, I will assume that my missing gift was a mistake. I will give you 1 week to fix this, Jeremy."
Oh, wow.
that's contract law there. If he ate the cookies, you got to come across, you know. So, but anyway, Santa replies, "Dear Jeremy." Santa replies in a typewritten letter signed Santa, "Dear Jeremy, sorry you're disappointed with your presents. You asked for two very expensive presents, and Santa can only do so much. You need to learn to be grateful for what you have, not upset about what you don't. If you continue to complain, I'll have no choice but to add you to the naughty list next year, Santa." Jeremy replies, "Dear Fatty."
"You're fatty?"
Your threats don't scare me. I played your game and you did not deliver. This is not okay. I will give you 1 week and then you will pay, Jeremy. P.S. I don't know why you care that it is expensive when you have elf slaves to make things for you. I think you are naughty for having slaves.
Oh, God.
Oh. So wait, Santa replies in a typewritten letter. "Dear Jeremy,
I know where you sleep, kid.
You are being a very bad little boy. Because you cannot be happy with what you have, I have talked to your parents and told them to take away your whatever that is. Now you have nothing. Once you learn to be grateful, perhaps you can have it back. I am very disappointed in you, Jeremy. You will need to be extra good, be an extra good boy this year if you want to be back on the nice list." Jeremy replies, "Dear Santa, I do not like that stunt you pulled with my parents. You are on my naughty list now. Be afraid." "You look slow and easy to kill. Enjoy your cookies. Enjoy your cookies next year because they will be poison. I hope you die, Jeremy."
Ooh.
Wow, what a falling out with St. Nicholas there.
Please tell me there's more and that it escalates.
No, I wish. That's all I got. That's it. Just
this kid is an evil kid. No wonder he didn't get most toys he wanted.
I like the kid myself, but
Jeremy, the Santa Claus here. I've just relayed a message to my cousin Krampus. Have a good one.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is why I can't be Santa Claus, is I don't have that kind of patience. Because, like, maybe my second response would have been, I know where you sleep, you little bastard.
Yeah. No, Jeremy would say, hey, fat guy, bring on your Krampus. I'm ready. I'm waiting up nights. Come on. Bring it. Jeremy is like, wow.
God.
Very funny. I just saw this while we were en route to finishing Erie House. I saw this, and I was like, what am I seeing here? This is...
I don't know, but I like it.
Yeah, it's a darker aspect of the season, but wow, that was funny. I had to read more. I was like, what? Wait, what? Oh, man.
I would send the kid videos of, like, that one Tales from the Crypt with the crazed Santa Claus breaking in.
Oh, yeah.
Or American Horror Story in chat, too, I think.
Oh, yeah. And there's, like, something called Bad Santa. And, I mean, there's a bunch. And I'm not necessarily a fan of those, but, I mean, take it for what it is.
I decided to buy a gift after all. Watch this. Sleep nice.
Yeah.
Sleep good. You little
demon spawn.
Kiss my big red sleigh.
Sleigh. Yeah.
Gentlemen,
that's right.
Gentlemen, I must be away for, unfortunately, I must, that four-letter word known as work.
I have to do it, too. And I still have to put tomorrow's show together. And I've got too. So I agree.
All right. You folks had fun. I hope to join you tomorrow. I actually got nailed with a migraine earlier today, and fortunately, medication helped. So.
Good. We're glad you joined us, of course, as always.
Absolutely.
The whole family
so
here
one...
for the holidays.
Yep.
Hooray!
The four horse people of the apocalypse winding down the new year.
Wow. No woman's ever called me a horse before.
I've been called part of a horse. The south end
the
of an old
wild
horse, let's put it that way.
All right. Be careful. The ruler is right at my fingertips. Right at my fingertips.
Oh, you're not going to go all Sister Mary busted knuckles, are you? Oh, good heavens.
With that said, I'm knocking on the door of our Mr. Durante to take it away, Mr. Durante, if you would be so kind.
And tickle those
eyes. Even if you wouldn't.
Good night. So soothing.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Wherever you are.
So soothing.
Not as soothing as the goat. To me, at least. What do I know?